Hi, I'm magician Nelson Lugo.
Hi, I'm nerdcore rapper Shay for the Dark Lord.
We're best friends
who hate each other's guts.
And we co-host The Epic Podcast,
a monthly show in which we discuss comic books,
video games,
television,
movies,
our debilitating emotional problems,
and Batman.
So much Batman.
That's The Epic Podcast
on the Nerdy Show Podcast Network.
Be safe, internets.
Bye. Seriously, so much Batman.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse.
All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Flame On. I am joined today by a phenomenal team of individuals, most of which I know, or well, half of which I know, I guess. But I'm very excited to meet the other half. So I'm going to start in the order that I think you're seeing it online. So we're going to go like to my right and then down and around. So bear with me. Zan Christensen from Northwest Press. Hello, Zan.
Hi there.
Then we have the co-creator and writer for Dash, Dave Abersole.
Hey, how are you?
And then I'm going to call you Vinny, right? This is cool. You go by Vinny, right? Vinny Rico, down around there. The current artist on issues, I believe, 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. And then almost down and all the way around, just below me, the fantastic and talented co-creator of Dash and artist on the first half, Delia Gable.
Hi.
Welcome.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, well, loud and clear. So we are gathered here today to talk about Dash, and Northwest Press has a great promo video that they put together for the Kickstarter, so we're going to just kick off with that. After you, Zan.
If I've settled for anything, it's Los Angeles. She's up front. She's non-committal. She's the only thing I know I can trust because I know I can't trust her. The case of the mysterious Zita Macara. Being a PI, you learn fast what seems like a normal case. Never is. You never realize how much you're going to need your friends. Officer Sal McGillicuddy, my inside on the police force, my wisecracking secretary, Cindy Crenshaw. You can never guess how near your enemies are. And you never know who to trust. Trap doors are essentially two things, either a means to escape or a place to keep things hidden. Now I'm chasing down an ancient artifact, the only thing that can stop this newly unearthed terror. It sounds crazy, but I'm not thinking how nuts it all is. All I can think about is the only man who ever managed to grab my heart is right at the heart of this mystery. And why? Every time my heart gets involved in anything, there's always a monster waiting in the shadows to break it.
That was fantastic.
Woo!
I kind of want the whole series now as an animatic, like whatever they call those now, animated comic books. So that was a great, I guess, encapsulation of Dash. So What else about the core story and concept, and I'm going to throw this to Dave to start, would you say is worth telling the audience here, other than what they have just seen? And if they missed it, they missed out. But how would you like, give the elevator pitch and anything else you think is critical to understanding what Dash is?
It's a supernatural noir about an openly gay detective in 1940. It's a love letter to kind of like everything, all of those tropes, and they kind of take those tropes and we do our best to kind of try to present them in a way that you haven't seen them before. Like the show mashup or the movie mashup would be the Maltese Falcon meets the Mummy meets Raiders of the Lost Ark through the eyes of an openly gay man in 1940.
Which, from previous discussions that we've had, Dashiell Malone, as an out person in that era, is sort of an exception to some extent, right? So when you were creating this concept, you know, I think you had to do some kind of research, and you sort of dug in on what it was like to be, you know, gay in that era. Is there anything about that that informed you, or things that you read that kind of brought some of that to your attention and understanding?
Bleeding Cool called us anachronistic, which Delia and I, when we were like, we're trying our best to make. It wasn't common to be openly gay in 1940. In fact, it was a mark on you. You could do a lot of jail time. You could or be killed. But there were those few who did it. And kind of at its core, I felt like if you were outed, and you were kind of like a star on the police force, like what's lower than an openly gay man in 1940? Private Eye.
So let's talk to Delia a little bit, because Delia, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since throughout the history of Dash. So I'm very excited. When Dave, I assume, came to you with this idea and you guys started bouncing back and forth ideas, you know, what were some of the things that you wanted to make sure were addressed and covered? And what did you sort of bring to the table besides your amazing art? What kind of ideas did you help Dave develop? And what were some of your own?
Well, some of it immediately, we spent a lot of time. Do you remember all the back and forth on what the office phone would look like? So I have about 30 pictures of just a range of telephones from like 1937 to 1942. Just one of many files. So visual accuracy was important. The palette was extremely important. And we wanted to kind of get that pulp vibe through the texture, that texturization of the color. So I also ran about like five different filters. Do you remember? I was like, what about this? What do you think about this? And you were like, I can't tell. And I was like, close your eyes. Trick, that's the same one.
That did happen. It was like, I'm like, I like it. It's cool.
So we're looking at one of the pages that are up on Northwest Press Facebook. And I think this is one of the first shots that you have of Dash's office. So I can see the telephone right there. And of course, that banker's lamp that I actually had growing up, which I love, that still to this day, I need to get another one. They still make them, I believe. I've still seen them in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, funny. What else do you really, of course, if you're really paying attention, you see the booze in the back there. I think that's critical to this era, right?
That's a lot of booze.
It's quite a well-stocked bar for an office, right? And of course, that overhead shot of the fan is like one of those shots that is just like standard, right? I can think immediately of Blade Runner, because that's sort of a cyber future noir, but so many like borrow that, you know, that concept. So go ahead.
I was gonna say, we really wanted to get that pulp iconography seeded throughout visually, just so even if it wasn't right in your face, it would subconsciously throw you back to that era. So it wasn't just like, look at this modern guy in an office that, you know, maybe has a vintage piece. And so there are some Easter eggs through there as well. So I like that you noticed the booze, because it's such a huge part of every 1930s, 1940s PI-based movie.
And then, of course, Mad Men, The Office was boozy.
Yeah.
Mad Men was like almost like a generation later. Like, it was a long time later, and yet it's still such a standard, right? I love the costuming too, Delia. Actually, two things that I really love about your art are the costuming and the acting in the faces. I love Cindy's facial reactions so much, and again, the costuming I feel like is so spot on to what I know of that era, and I wasn't there, but if, you know, much of the stuff I've seen over the years. Even recently, the Ryan Murphy Hollywood Netflix series had some great memories of that era. So, yeah, I mean, what about, like, I mean, other than just great research, you know, I mean, you formed these iconic characters, none of which look alike to me. You know, so is there anything about, like, the character creation and sort of the ideas that you and Dave came up with informing the look of each character that you want to talk about?
Yeah. So we went through, when I'm making a character, there's a whole process. We usually start with who they remind us of. I know I'd have to start. I'm like, who are you thinking about, let's say, you know, face-wise, actor-wise, when you're thinking of this character? And then I'll go find a bunch of pictures of that person and then extrapolate sort of the definitive facial features of that person, and then keep drawing just samples of that person until I find the look that I'm like, that's them, that's him, that's her, that's them. And then we roll from there. And then I usually just make a character sheet of my favorite facial moments. But I also, expression is really important to me, because I think hypothetically you should be able to read a comic with no words if you had to.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of your strengths, is your visual storytelling is really strong, and I completely agree. There are so many comics that you have to read, that you just have to read every, you know, if you took away the word balloons, you'd be like, what's going on? This is crazy. But Dash definitely reads visually in a very cool way, so I think you nailed it. Let's talk to Vinny a little bit, because I know, Vinny, you had a tall order to sort of inherit all of this rich character design and storytelling choices, and then carry the baton. So what was it like working with Delia and Dave and trying to kind of come in mid stride and kind of continue the race from where you handed it off?
Well, Dave came to me in the form of an email. So he showed me all these issues of Dash, of these previous issues, and asked me if I could work with him. So I said, yeah, no problem. But when he showed me all this concept as he describes it as a love letter for this this horror genre and all this noir genre, and I suddenly made a click with him in this concept. And when I saw these characters, the characters that Delia drew, and then he showed me all these references, I started to work on it. And There's something funny, because he showed me these kind of actors that looks like Dash, but when I took that reference, the first time I drew Dash was like, he has this big forehead, almost like he's bald, and Dave, he's a sweet guy. And I think he, when he saw it, I think he was like, I don't think he looks like that at all.
I remember that.
So what I did was like, yeah, I think he doesn't look like the guy that is in the previous issues. So what I did was like, well, I based totally on Delia's beautiful work, because as you said, he's very expressive in so many ways. You know, the hands, you know, the faces they do, they express a lot. So I based totally on Delia work, and made a quick sketch, and then they said that yeah, it's totally him. So so the way Dave writes these references, these issues, the scripts he makes, it's like he's I don't know how to translate this, but as a theater director, like this play director, and it's like, yeah, I need him to look like this, but don't make it totally this way. So he delivers a lot of references, just as Delia said. It's like, you know, there is like 37 phones, you know, but it's something like he's very passionate about it, and it, you know, you totally like that in a project. So when the way he showed me the idea, I was like, yeah, I'm totally in, because it's this genre, but it touches these other issues, no? You know, like the sexual diversity, like the trust. You know, I see it like it's a story about trust. It's a story that doesn't talk about masculinity in a bad way. You know, like this is a very this is like your typical detective guy. He is not like that. He is like a sweet, caring guy. So I was totally in, and I'm very proud of being in the project. So that's all I have to say.
That's good. No, you're right though. You touched on something very important. Dash is not that hard boiled in the traditional way, I would say.
It's kind of like he's trying to be. I think there's a lot of expectations, and there's it seems like there's pain that he's trying to avoid having to deal with, and the way he does that is to try to kind of distance himself from stuff, and then Cindy's like, I'm not going to do that.
She's my favorite character.
Yeah, she's really amazing. So you're doing a story with her, right? You're doing the art on the short story.
Yeah, it's coming these days. Mm-hmm.
So Dave, talk about what it's like to work with both Delia and Vinny, and like, you know, go through your process with them and how they differ in terms of the relationship that you have, like developing this.
Well, Delia and I spent like a good like year and a half like talking on the phone for like 3 to 4 hours every week developing this, and developing the world, and not just this arc, but like the entirety of the series, like just bound, like, but like I was like big picture and then we'd have to figure out what the phone I do want to tell a funny story about the costuming though. So Delia was so accurate in all the clothing that Dash's pants were a certain height, and I was like, that's 100, but it's too high.
Oh yeah, I remember.
It was like he looked like just like old man, like, and I was like, I'm like, it's accurate to the time period, but like we want people to read the costume.
Yeah.
So we did spend like quite a bit of that time, like, where are we dropping his pants to? Like,
well, it's like, you can't go below the navel, but
for being a gay publisher, I do a lot of period work. Like the first book we did was a turn of the century 1893 adaptation. Had a lot of the same things where if you're too accurate, it's really distracting. It's, you have a lot of cultural stuff to translate that way. So you do have to kind of cheat a little. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it was kind of like it was trying to find that. I just actually I just found that book, Dan. I was just rearranging my bookshelves and I just found that book. The moving on to like working with Vinny is especially in the story, just the action in the story where he came in, just that's when it really ramps up. And issue 6 is out in August, and that's it was delivering on, like, there was just one page where I just wrote carnage and Delia's seen it because like she's read the script. So like, and I had no idea what to expect. And Vinny just went there, and it's a little, it's shocking, but that's kind of where we picked up where things were just moving just like super quickly. What I loved about his style is that it complemented Delia's style very well. And they you know, Delia kind of showed him how she was working, and he's kind of developed his own thing, and especially in issue 6. He took a lot more ownership of some things. And it's probably like the goofiest issue too, which is just cute in places. I'm actually just so happy that we're all here right now because it's never happened. So I'm just really happy that we're all here.
Aw, I love that.
Voltron ourselves into a giant
robot. I love that model. So Zan, I want to talk to you about the publishing model for this. And sure. I know we've talked in other places, including Comic Book Bears most recently, about some of the issues of Kickstarter, you know, the strengths of Kickstarter versus or crowdfunded mm-hmm. versus traditional publishing. But with this project specifically, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned and seen and grown, and how do you feel this project overall has done and is currently doing? Because I definitely want to talk about the actual, like, as of this date, July 1st, you know, where we're at with the project in terms uh-huh. of funding. Like, you know, talk to some of the publishing related and sort of your perspective on this whole endeavor.
Sure. So when I started doing publishing, I was focusing primarily on graphic novels and collections of like web comics and zines and things like that. So everything I did was long form. And so this was pitched at a Comic-Con by Dave to me, pressed a, you know, preview copy in my hand. I'm like, it's already all here. We decided to try doing it as single issue comics, which is really hard to do. I mean, I do these book projects, and it does take a long time to do all the proofing and the, you know, you've solicited and you have to get things done way in advance in order to show the art of for the cover and, you know, deal with all of the shipping and the printing and the proofing and all that. So having to do that, you know, every other month or every quarter to do the comic was challenging. And then it's hard to do, you know, to keep a schedule because everybody, you know, this is all labor of love type stuff. Even for me, I mean, I had a day job for some of the time, you kind of fit it in when you can, and you prioritize, you know, eating and having a house to live in, like an apartment to live in. So, it was tricky. I'm really glad that we tried it, and we will actually have the whole six issues will be out in print. It's actually was in previews in June. I have a bunch of orders to fill for the last issue. But I'm really excited to get it into a collection because when you see it all at once, there's through lines that you catch that you don't always see from issue to issue. It's kind of like the binge model versus the weekly model for TV. They both have their strengths. And I like that we got to do it both ways, but I'm really excited about the collection and having it all in one space where you can kind of like, you know, just enjoy it at your own pace. And I'm excited to have extra stuff in it. This Kickstarter is actually so far, I think it's one of the best, kind of like the best performing ones that we've done because we're about 80% done and it's only been a week. So I don't mind that. That's pretty good.
I was so thrilled because you never know, like you said, and I followed a lot of your Kickstarters over the years and funded a decent amount. And I definitely always am sort of like checking, like, oh, how's it going? And this thing is just a rocket ship. It has been unbelievable. I was going to throw it up real quick. Just, I mean, this is kind of like by now, by the time you hear this, I mean, unless you're watching live, you know, this will hopefully be completely funded, but look at that. You guys are, 80% there. That's fantastic. And with 324 different backers for a project like, you know, that Dash has had, especially given the schedules and various, you know, changes over the lifespan, like that's just so outstanding.
Yeah. I've been doing a little tracking. I'm obsessive. It's the same way with running on a treadmill. I'm always doing different math. I'm like, well, now I'm going to track minutes, and then now I'm going to track calories. And I go back and forth, do these little calculations in my head. I do the same thing with the Kickstarter, where I'm constantly putting the data into the spreadsheet and seeing where we are. One of the things I'm watching is our print run, because we're coming up to about 600 copies that we'll need to do diamond distribution, to do comp copies. I'm going to do a bunch of bonus copies to stores. I'm going to every store that's ordered from Northwest Press in the past 10 years, I'm going to send them some comp copies of the book, just because stores need our support and our help. And so when I add up all these copies, we're coming up on 600. So if we crest 1,000, we'll have to print more of them, which is great. Which means more payment to the artists, which means more, you know, we could do probably some extra stuff in the book because we have economies of scale. So I just could not be more pleased with how this is going. And it's totally a testament to the work that's being, you know, being promoted here. I mean, it could not happen unless there were people who were already excited about this and were, you know, just itching for it. I'm really happy that it did not turn out that everybody wanted to not spend any money on comics right now. So that was kind of, I'm a little nervous about that, but people are, you know, they want to have some normalcy and some entertainment and something to kind of distract them from all the stresses. There's lots of stuff going on. So yeah, I'm really happy with it.
Yeah. I was actually, I was thinking about like content right now, and even things like this, like people want content more than ever because they have so much less going on outside. If they're staying in, now if they're going out and being crazy, that's a whole other thing. But then they got way
and being righteous, going out and being, you know, bold and necessary.
Well, there's both, right? There's the people going out and being bold and necessary, and the people going out and like from my home state, Florida, who are just being stupid.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. But I want to talk to Delia though, because you're down in Portland, and
close.
Oh, Tacoma. I'm so sorry. Portland, Tacoma. They're like, you know what, 2 hours.
South of Seattle. It's all south of Seattle.
You're even closer to us here in Seattle. I love that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, what is it like right now for you, especially with Seattle going on, with the chop just now being completely removed, let's just say ended, I guess, in some ways. You know, how are you feeling right now with everything going on, with the protests and demonstrations? You know, what is your perspective on this, and how do you feel as a Washingtonian? Because it is sort of an interesting place for us to kind of comment from.
Yeah. Well, since I live and work in the South Sound, and I also work in healthcare, so yeah, it's been a really interesting time. One of the coolest things I've seen, especially in Tacoma, because I moved here because I love it, and that hasn't changed. But seeing so many people just unequivocally come out for Black Lives Matter, it's really, and it's kind of cliche, but it's like, I feel loved by strangers. Like, this is kind of amazing. Like, I don't know. I've never seen so many people not try to play both sides against the fence, you know, or both sides against the middle, and just, you know, all lives. It's like, I just love that people are coming out for it. Now, you know, South Sound is pretty red. So that's also interesting, you know. How many people come into my job and then try to hide their MAGA caps? And it's not even, they're wearing it and then they see me and they're like, I had one guy who literally was like this the whole time. And I was like, oh, he must probably have a neck issue or something.
Oh, okay. They try to hide it around you, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a little bit of self-awareness.
Right? I'm like, yeah, that's good. You know, that's great. Hide it, yeah.
It's just right there then. Like, it's just, if you're hiding what you're...
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, you're very bold in certain areas, and then you're just going to, like...
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Well, now so, I know about Tacoma. No, I'm just kidding. But there's
Tacoma's
a good...
Great. We've had so many people come out for the protests, and, you know, I just watched. I didn't go. Just out of... I was... worried about my own safety, but and also, you know, COVID. But
right,
just watching so many people come out and be, you know, and the paid agitators not come down and try to mess things up, and just watching people put signs in their windows so that we could see them. So I took a lot of pictures around town and people writing stuff on the sidewalk. It's like really positive. And so that's a lot nicer than what happened a few years ago. So,
oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, people are interested in more comprehensive, real action. Like, there's some circles I run in, and like in my, where people are, you know, I'm used to people being like, well, you know, we'll do something, or we'll do this special effort and then we'll be done. But I think that, you know, I don't think people are going to stand for that. I don't think people are going to, you know, it's not enough. It's never been enough. And it's people that I would not expect to be as, I mean, even myself, like I'm much more, I feel radicalized in a way because I finally get that these solutions have not been solutions, and there's just no way to do it. Like, you just have to do something radically different because it's been forced, you know, and it's time. It's been time. So I'm kind of like, it's scary. I mean, it's to do something like this, and it's going to take a lot of work, but at the same time, it does feel possible now. Like, people are really on board, and we're coming up on November. So, like,
yeah, you
know, something might happen in November. So, I don't know.
I will say, you know, I do believe in law enforcement as an important part of society because, you know, desegregation wouldn't have happened without law enforcement enforcing the new law.
Right.
I just think we all want the same accountability for that job as we all have for our own jobs. Like,
right.
Accountability. I want to ask. Training, like oversight, all of that, like, it's shocking. Like, as someone who has only had a few run-ins with the law, none of which thankfully threatened my safety, which I am very privileged to have, you know, my experience, but I just, it's shocking to me when you read up and you realize all of the statistics and all of the anecdotes and all of the lack of oversight and training. I mean, here in Seattle, at least there's some oversight because of the issue that were the unfortunate loss of life that happened a few years ago here.
Yeah.
I can't think of the term, whatever the federal government coming in and saying, all right, we're going to
consent decree. Yeah.
But having said that, the thing with the chop and watching, a black woman chief of police negotiate and deal with that situation has been immensely informative and fascinating. And I've just, I mean, we've had national attention here in Seattle with the chop and everything. And to the credit, I mean, we're recording this the day they took it down. I really do hope it stays like peacefully, contained, not contained. I don't want it to be contained, but peacefully executed, maybe for lack of a better term, because we don't want loss of life for such a great cause. We want this cause to continue, but we also don't want
violence. And I think that's what you're kind of talking to, dealing with law enforcement. And
yeah, the intent is good. Then I think then, you know, the intent is always to bring people together. And it's like, can we just move past this stupid, you know, just, I don't know. It's yeah. a constant source of frustration where it's like, oh, we're not over this. I thought, oh, okay. People are still going to be stupid and
yeah.
prejudiced. I thought we were over it.
Right. Oh gosh. So this is this is the freeform part, by the way. So anyone in the chat? Oh, we actually have someone in the chat who just commented. I'll read that in a second. But I am reminded of an episode of Golden Palace that I shared. I believe Terry Bloss actually is the reason I shared it. But with Rose and not Rose as much, Blanche dealing with a very young what's his name?
Cheadle. Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle, who like unrecognizably young. I'm like, oh my gosh. And this was over, around 30 years ago that this happened. And it was such a very important moment in television from the early 90s that is so relevant today. We'll make sure it's shared up on our Flame on Facebook and please share it all over because I don't think Golden Palace got the credit it deserved.
Yeah.
Anyway.
One season. That would...
But yeah, so we got two comments. Sorry, so let me go to the comments real quick. Carlos has a question. What's next for Dash to investigate after he solves the case of the mysterious Zeta Macara? And I think that this is a we don't want to spoil anything, right? We don't want to give away the secrets here.
Spaceships.
Spaceships. Oh, we're doing that. Okay, well, there you go.
Time travel.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
He settles down with a woman named Bernice, and they have like three kids. And he lives a nice, happy life.
Oh,
that is if he ends up solving the mystery of the case of the mysterious Zeta Macara at the end of issue 6.
Hmm. Well, of course, I hope, and we talked about this in the other interview. I really hope that there is some exciting news and/or directions to come. I will follow on with Carlos's his next comment. I think we all hope that there will be lightsabers involved or swords of some kind. They may not be lightsabers. Lightsabers would be great, but
there's swords involved in issue 5, and there's swords involved in issue 6 for sure. There's.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, very nice.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And we have another comment here from is it Yaro Ruiz?
Yeah, it's a good friend.
Oh, excellent. Well, we're glad he's joined us. That's very nice. Thank you, Yaro. All right, sorry. So freeform time. How are you all doing? Let's have a little check in on our mental and spiritual sanity. What are you? Yeah. Oh God. I'll frame it this way. What are you doing amidst the pandemic and we'll call it civil unrest, but really, you know, activism and fantastic seismic cultural changes, hopefully for the better. What are you doing right now to like, you know, invest some of that energy back into your creative space and or in projects or just things for yourself? And I'm going to start with Vinny. You know, how are you doing and what are you doing to keep your sanity right now?
Well, over here in Mexico, there has been so many rough time because many of the activity, of the laboral activity, it's people living day by day jobs. So a lot of people has to go out every day and search for something to live. I mean, something for their income. So one of the troubles I see over here is like, well, I try to help some of the people I know, like sending them some money or something like that, or trying to help some of the people in the neighborhood. But you know, it makes me like help. I want something to get distracted. So I'm working right now on the short stories for the Kickstarter. And sometimes I read a lot about... actually, one of the things that I like of this project is that has making me rediscover a lot of things that I've never appreciate before. Like, you know, Dave, he is like, well, one of the things I appreciate of having him in social media is that he shares some of the things he likes. And one of the things I've discovered he likes a lot is Batman. So, so he shared one time a post of Batman, the animated series. These days, I've been watching a lot of Batman the animated series, some of the original voice acting work that it's awesome. I didn't know, for example, that Mark Hamill voiced the Joker, you know, that's like some years ago. And, you know, these kind of things, like rediscovering some of the things that I've never appreciated back in time. This is something that I really, really enjoy of the people that share things they love, because sometimes you don't appreciate them as with a critical eye or with some new perspectives. So I've been watching a lot of Batman the animated series the first years. So it's like, oh yeah. I didn't remember that being so cool, like I was a kid.
I highly recommend, if you're digging Batman the Animated Series right now, Paul Dini, one of the writers of that show, who invented, of course, Harley Quinn and, you know, did a bunch of other fantastic work. He wrote this fantastic autobiographical comic called Dark Knight. It is so insightful, both to his perspective of Batman and the cast of characters, but also the personal experiences he had during the writing of the animated series. If you have not found that, I highly recommend 100%. Check that out.
Gonna check it out.
Yeah, Paul Dini is amazing. Oh, we got another one from Carlos here. I'm gonna pop that on before we continue along. And I have no, even though I'm from Florida, I have the smallest amount of Spanish speaking experience, so I'm not even going to attempt this. Can you guys see that?
He's asking if I'm going to make a comic about how coronavirus affected Mexico, maybe a hero that helped people from Mexico. I know, for example, Delia last comment that she made about the COVID with and the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, something like that creative people share is that critical view about things that happen around the world. So I'm living over here in Mexico. It's a very 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 interesting theme, but I don't see as that I'm doing a superhero or something. I mean, we have over here in Mexico a health campaign that it's called Susana Distancia. That it consists in keeping safe distance from people. So she's a character that was made by the government. By this administration that expands her arms and and keeps people from touching them. So it's a very good concept, and people has been doing fan arts, but I don't see myself doing that kind of thing. I'm more like, you know, something more like I think when I have the time, I'm gonna share a little thoughts about it. I mean, something like, for example, Dave, when Dave writes, his scripts. He just doesn't write something like, oh yeah, and then he enters this room and then he goes, he's like, he describes the mood, the setting, and you know, he when you see the sorry for my bad English, by the way.
I'm great.
So when he describes a scene or something, you can tell that he has this critical view about society, about these issues like sexual diversity, like these kind of things. So I think this is kind of the stories that I like that touch this topic. So it's kind of like, well, I don't think I'm gonna talk about coronavirus, but I'm gonna talk about how affects the people that lives around me, and the people that I care, and the people for example, we've been in quarantine 3 months, so I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna start missing my friends or something. So
I think there's gonna be a lot of amazing art that comes out of the pandemic. If it's anything like, you know, other major catastrophes like 9/11 and throughout history. Dave, what are your thoughts as a playwright? Because I know some of this that Vinny's talking about comes from your masterful, you know, being, you know, playwright writing, because you set all of those pieces there for the people acting and directing your plays to know what to do. What do you think, and what's keeping you sane, and how do you think the coronavirus and pandemic and Black Lives Matter, even, how is that affecting what you're thinking right now and creating?
It's actually kind of fueling this, because I mean, I set this in 1940, which is about two years before Pearl Harbor was bombed, and then we actually stepped up as a society and joined the war, because we were living in kind of like with our heads in the ground for quite a while. So it's been like, there's been some weird parallels between this and what's going on today. I mean, like, I don't know what state it was, but it was just last night. There's a governor, I think it was like, I don't want to like guess the state, but there was a governor who's literally, well, there's so many governors like putting in like mask, like everyone has to wear a mask. There's a governor who's now saying like, if you have that in place, we're gonna fine you. And that's insane to me.
I think it's Ricketts in Nebraska, because there's a big outbreak near a meatpacking processing plant.
Yeah.
And that's like got the most crazy infections anywhere in the country almost. And it's like, oh no, you have to let people walk into your courthouses and your city halls with no masks on, please.
I mean, to me, it's insane. And in 1940, we were putting our, like, you know, we were going la la la, nothing is like, we're fine. You know, nothing has affected us. Meanwhile, like, you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, like how many people have to die before, you know, they start, you know, defunding the police, which means not just like taking money away from the police, but putting money where it needs to be, like, so they're not overburdened with the mental health issues, with the education issues, with, like, you know, all of these other things. It's having these like weird parallels for me. I mean, I personally had like a lot of like weird health issues this year, so I've been totally sheltering in place and just trying to get through. I mean, but there's an activity that's happening that today is the actual midpoint of this year. I read that on the internet, so it must be true. So
6 months, woohoo.
So I'm hopeful, but I'm also dreading. But I'm also hopeful about what's going to happen in the coming months, you know. But I think all we can do is, I mean, all I can do is just keep on like doing what I can do, is just writing and trying to connect to people and trying to connect people through art. That's the best thing. I that's the only thing I know how to do. Like, I mean, I can't fix a sink or change a tire, but I can do that.
There are YouTube videos to teach you that though now, so you're good.
No, I'm not good with that. Like, I can't even, like, I mean, I'm just even bad with a calculator. Like, I mean, like, or time zones. Like, as everyone knows, like, I'm not really good, like, today. Like, I don't know how time zones work. So, like, but connecting people through art is what I know how to do. And it's stuff that I'm looking forward to doing. I'm not looking forward to a lot of, like, apocalyptic COVID stories coming out of this. That's what I'm worried about. And that's what we all have to guard on. We have to keep our guard up about that. Don't do it.
I was about to watch Dark on Netflix last night, and I watched the trailer, and I said, nope, hard pass. Not doing it right now. Sorry.
I appreciate the, what was, Black Mirror for holding back their season, saying it's way too dark for right now. We're not going to put this out. Like, I appreciate that.
He's writing funny stories. He's trying to do anything else besides dystopian related stuff. Carlos has got another great comment for Delia. That's awesome. Loves your hair, and your hair is fantastic. So this is actually a great question that I was thinking serve over to you. Well, I know you're in healthcare, and you've done a lot of different projects. You're kind of like me. I think you do a lot of different things and sort of like juggle them around as you best you can. Yeah. Are you doing anything new in terms of illustrating, and what other creative projects are you, considering or actively, working on?
Since I do a lot of different things, I'm also in some bands, so.
She's a rock star.
I need to hear this. I need to know.
One is Seattle-based and one is Tacoma-based. Yeah. At the end of last year, the Tacoma-based one, the Whole Bolivian Army, made an album and published it. I don't know what, I always forget, like, publish an album, right? That's totally the thing that people say, right?
I think you publish an album, sure.
Right, yeah.
It sits on a shelf with your books, I got it, yeah.
Right, and then you read it later.
You read it, yeah. What do you play? What are your instruments, or what do you do with within the band?
Just one, bass.
Okay, great. I'm trying to learn the bass. I have a bass, it sits in my closet. I need to get it out and,
Oh my God, we should talk about bass after this.
Yes. Are you meeting and doing jam sessions on the Zoom?
No, because Zoom doesn't really handle multiple. We're all loud. Both bands are loud, so it would destroy our computers.
Got it.
So Courtney specifically wants to know the names of the bands.
There's not a plant either. One is the Whole Bolivian Army, and it's hard indie rock. And that's the one we did an album. I did the album art for that. So that was really cool. And then the other band is called Mallory. And we were going to record an album, and then COVID happened. So we stay in touch. We're trying to do like a demo exchange, but it's on hold. But I will do the art for that too. And then no more art for any bands for a while. But I'm also working on, found it. That's a real zoom in. It's not just that. But,
look at your headshot. My goodness. You're,
Yeah, it's a great headshot.
Look at that.
Hey, it's dramatic. It was accidentally traumatic.
It is such a rock star. That's like such a that's a rock star headshot. I'm so jealous of you.
We could do one for you too, and we could make up a band, and then we could write a comic story about it.
I love how this is going. So Whole Bolivian is the one out of Seattle.
That one's the one out of Tacoma.
Oh, Tacoma.
And then Mallory is the one out of Seattle, and that's queer power punk.
Oh, is it boy!
Named after who I think it's named after.
It's probably not, because some people have asked some different things, and some things we were surprised to learn.
Okay.
But it's sort of like, because it's all girls, and it's like babysitter you had a crush on, like the mythical older babysitter / friend's older sister that you might have had a crush on and then realize you were queer.
It's a great name.
And there are some characters in like different shows and stuff. But then, yeah, somebody came recently and they were like, oh, is this? Because we were actually dressed in leopard outfits. And they were like, oh, is this from Riverdale? And we were like, what? Okay, now. I was like, oh, God, don't sue us for copyright infringement. We had no idea. We had no idea. It is not related. This is totally coincidental. And then, we're wearing ears and and we're like, no, we actually had no idea. And then I'm also working on a story of my own, which it's really hard to write before you draw. I don't really understand it. So it's probably going to take forever. So don't hold your breath, but it's somewhere at some point in time.
Oh, I'm excited for when bands can, you know, start playing again. And sounds like, it feels like maybe outdoor might be first, because I was just getting a promo for at least a drag race, drive-in drag race show coming in August to Seattle. And I was like, oh, well, this is the return of the drive-in, and why not drive-in concerts? I mean,
that is cool. Yeah, and then you can have like an auto, like the people on roller skates coming up to your car and doing the tricks.
I with missed that.
Song, that's like that. That's
awesome. You heard it here first. We made it up. We all get
points. Copyright that.
Yeah. Boom. No, done.
Saw that. So, Zan, what are you doing other than, you know, obviously, you know, carrying the weight of a publishing company on your shoulders? How are you keeping sane? What are you doing creatively, and or what are you? How is your self-health?
Well, I've been, I don't know if any of you follow me on the social medias, but I've been doing a lot of cooking. I was already cooking before, but I just dove in, and I'm trying to do all kinds of crazy things. One thing I've discovered, unfortunately, that I know how to make and make really well is a Chicago-style deep dish pizza.
Ooh.
Dangerous, let me tell you, because there's only two of us, and my pan is 10 inches round, and so like it becomes like a casserole of pizza that lasts for one day. Oof. That's dangerous.
Only one day
because it's too good, and I'm like rah. And there's like one piece left for lunch tomorrow. That's about it. That's dangerous.
Seems like you need help, and we are glad to help.
I've enlisted my neighbors. I made what's called millionaire shortbread. Do you know what those are called? You know what those are? Oh, it's a really buttery shortbread with a layer of caramel and a layer of chocolate on top of it. It's like a Twix bar, only fancy.
Oh, man.
And so I made this giant tray of millionaire shortbread. And after I had done it, I thought, oh, who's going to eat it? Because there's like a giant like 17-inch tray of candy cookies. So my neighbors next door have two kids. I'm like, ooh, and I brought them this big plate of them. I'm like, please let me know if you want any more. But aside from that, I've been doing a lot more writing of my own. I had a story that I wrote this long treatment actually years and years and years ago after the Pulse shooting. I was driving to a convention that weekend, and was just so emotional and so raw about that. And I wrote this kind of like time travel, kind of like, you know, like you were talking about, like a story about the catastrophe, about the problem, you know. So I wrote a time travel story directly addressing, you know, violence and why people do the things that they do. And it became this weird two-hander with a kind of a time detective and a Minority Report kind of thing, where he's not actually a killer, but will be or could be, and trying to like talk somebody out of hatred and talk somebody out of ignorance to get them to not have done something. So it's a weird story, but it was really great to write that. And then I don't know if you've been having COVID dreams. I've been having lots of like crazy dreams. I had a dream that our Kickstarter was overwhelmed by somebody who was managing to like pledge over and over again, and they put us up to $80,000. It was weird. It was like a nervous dream. But I've never had this before, where I had a dream about a complete story, almost like a movie script, which would be a cross between Her, the movie, and Postcards from the Edge. And ideally, it would star Carrie Fisher from her later years and Anne Hathaway from her earlier years. And so now I'm writing it, and it's kind of like it's going to be a New Yorker style nonfiction article about these people. It's got some science fiction. It's got lots of treatment of women in popular culture and in film and television. Kind of like the idea of chasing fame and what do you do when you don't have it, and what else do you have in your life, and fun light stuff like that.
Well, you have a request already from Courtney. I think they want a new stretch goal. So
wow, I don't know if I could. I've never set food out with a Kickstarter before. How about if we do cocktails instead?
Oh,
Dave, cocktails! Do you have any news you'd like to announce?
Sure.
We can.
And I was working on it today, but I'm working on it with one of my oldest friends. We're doing like it's one page in the collection, but there's a lot of we were talking about it before. Dash has a lot of alcohol in his in his office because he likes to make drinks, and so we're doing a page of all the drinks. Like an old fashioned type of page, like you would see in a magazine, but they're going to have the, like how to make them too.
I love this.
If you want to make them, we'll tell you how, and you don't, I mean, it's fine. Like if you don't drink, that's totally cool.
You can make a mocktail out of pretty much
substitute
a lot of cocktails.
Right. I just want you to make, I want you to drink well though. If you are going to drink, this is how I would prefer you to do it. I was working on the script for that today, and there also might be some new art from somebody else on the chat in the collection. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
I wonder who that would be.
with a hint to what's happening, what's coming next.
I'm very excited for that. Carlos has another great thought here, or a question rather, for you, Zan. I should probably read this because there will be audio of this. I just remembered that. Carlos says, Zan, I know you created co-created a series of your own. Have you ever collaborated with any of the artists you publish or think about working with anyone in particular?
You know, I think that I always kind of wanted to be a writer, but I'm not really. I think I'm a person who writes sometimes, and I've kind of gotten comfortable with that. I really love helping people get their stories heard and connect with readers. So publishing is a great outlet for me. But I do have some stuff that I've been kicking around for a long time. It's hard. I feel a lot of responsibility. I'm not sure if you feel this too, Dave, like when you're writing for somebody else, I feel a lot of nervousness about, providing enough guidance, like not being too strict about it, like kind of riding that line between not doing enough and doing too much, getting the whole thing done so that somebody can see the whole arc of it before they commit to doing it. Like it's especially in a lower rent kind of business like we have, it's hard to ask somebody to commit to a big project. So yeah, I think that at some point I'll have some shorter things done that I'll just work with an artist on for like a piece in an anthology or something. But I've been doing a lot more prose stuff because it's just me disappointing myself sometimes, or you know, being happy with it.
But that's the cool thing about collaborating with an artist, because like, I mean, I've prefaced all of my scripts with like, this is how I see it. And then like, you know, sometimes I'll put like way too much and I'll pay attention to like Vinny. Of course, Vinny's laughing. Like I'll put like, I will focus on like a specific detail, but then there'll just be a page of like, well, this happens. And like, like, yeah, so they both know it, but like, I always say like, if you have a better idea, let's do that idea, because it's for me, it's the story filtered through me, and now it's being filtered through another person, which is the awesome part of collaborating. It's the funnest part of comics, of making comics, is collaborating with other people and seeing how that idea kind of travels.
I've always enjoyed the second writing, like when you write, I'll write a script, art will come back from it, and then I just rewrite to fit, you know, to really polish up what's there, like to let the words speak to what's on the page, not what I might have imagined was going to be on the page, just to make sure that everything fits really well. That's always a fun process for me.
Like the Stan Lee pass of it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
There is. Just wanted to say something that Dave put on the table. It's that there is a page for the issue 6 that they actually acted himself
out
and sent me the whole sequence, the whole 9 panels, and I was like,
I made him do a 9 panel grid deal.
Oh wow.
and I was like, oh well, This is awesome, because you know, to express these ideas, and sometimes it is not only helpful, but you know, there is certain confidence you have with the writer. You know, oh yeah, he's like trying to say this and the whole sequence is like, I was actually excited today to see the final result and show it to him, and I was like, hey, I hope I could translate that idea into the images, into the pictures, you know. So I think it is a really hard work, but the results are something like you are very satisfied with it. And you know, you could give it a try.
What?
To make these stories like I deserve from a bad English, but it's like translate from these words to the pictures, to the images, and make them really, really to get the result and get you satisfied. Sorry for my bad ideas.
No. He's referring to like a page. It's right after the museum, Delia. I felt so bad. I'm like, I'm sorry. It's a 9 panel grid. And I got my friend Jay, who's actually the inspiration for the character of Sal. And I made him, I'm like, just come here. I need to take these pictures of us. And he was super helpful, but
pictures.
It's one of the most beautiful pages from this project, and I wanted it to be, yeah, like this has to be one of the best pages I've drawn, you know, like so.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see issue 6 and then the trade, because you guys have got some really cool stuff you're teasing. Adelia, you were going to say something at one point. I don't want to.
Yeah, sorry.
For make that. Sure you.
Well, I think we were both going to talk about Dave's scripts. Do you remember a couple of times when we'd be going through the script and I'd be like, you have an extra page in here? And you'd be like, no, I don't. I'd be like, no, this action happens on this page, this action happens on, and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I do. Can we make that work? I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think printing works.
So, I mean, well, because I had never written a comic before, and Delia, I mean, so she had to put up with a lot of that. Like,
oh, it was great. Like, stuff.
Page turns, and we've already established I'm terrible at numbers. So, like, I mean, I still have to pick up a comic and be like the page turn, like, and count, because I still, like, I just, it doesn't stay there.
We'd be talking about the drama of the page turn.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, we can't have this on 26 and 27. Like, why not? And then that one time you were like, it's 32 pages now, sorry.
Oops.
But
for the reader, you're just like, oh, yay, 32
that's
pages.
That's great for a publisher, too.
Oh. Yeah, it's great for a publisher. You love that.
I can bet.
The interview that you solicited is actually longer.
Yeah. We got two more comments here, and then we'll start to wrap up here. So, Courtney, have you thought about pitching Dash to a company like Netflix, Amazon Prime, or HBO?
Yes.
There you go. Those kind of things are always but you can't talk about them until they're like a done deal. So it's
well, Julie cool. And I have had this conversation before, is that like there's a lot of people get into comics and like we're like who with an idea like the we're gonna make this a television show or a movie and then we're gonna get rich because we're gonna do comics. It's gonna like, I mean, but if you're going to make a movie, make a movie. If you're going to make a TV show, make a TV show. Like, that's, I mean, like, for, like, I personally would love this to be adapted. But, like, for me, like, right now, like, my focus is, like, making this the best it is. And then, like, if it goes on to other things, then it'll be its own thing. But, like, I think there's a lot of, you have a story, I know, Delia, don't you? Like, one or, like, you've been there where people are... Or who not necessarily get in the comics for the wrong reasons, but like think, well, maybe it's for the wrong reasons.
It's like I'm making comics now, so like yeah.
Like
there are a lot, but I feel like I can't.
Right.
Any of them without. Yeah.
Well. Super big. But, so Carlos got another comment here. Dave, will we ever have a dashing Latino lover? You know. Will Dash ever have a dashing Latina lover in his future adventures? I suggest a sticky private investigator time traveling to Paita, Peru, and fall for a guy named Carlos.
I support the idea.
Feels like you might want to. Okay. Nice. Very nice.
There it is.
So Dash is out there on Kickstarter. Again, very successful so far with 20 days left. So yeah. We got to be able to carry this 20% more, where they would go on the northwestpress.com/Kickstarter is the best URL, right?
That's easy. Yeah.
Nice and easy.
Or just go on Kickstarter and say Dash.
Dash comic.
Dash comic. Dash graphic novel. Gay noir. Yeah.
All the search terms. And then where would we find each of you? And we'll do the same order that we did before. So, Zan, where do they find you on social media?
Northwestpress.com is a good place. I'm also, all those things on Twitter and Facebook. And our Instagram is not Northwest Press. That was taken. So I'm just Zan Seattle. And it's more pictures of me. I even posted a thirst trap.
What?
I didn't even know it was one until somebody told me.
Oh, now I have to go see him.
Yes.
I need to look.
Was that recently?
It was more like a sip. It was like a little sip. It wasn't like a giant Gatorade type thirst trap. It was, just a minor one.
And Dave, what about you?
You can find me at Debrasol without the E at the end on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on Facebook too. You can DaveEbersol.com. With the at the end. That's where you can find me.
And Vinny?
Oh, you can find me at Rick Comics in Twitter, Instagram, my blog, and Facebook. And I want to say hi to Yaro Ruiz, who is sending greetings in the comments.
And there's one more comment from him.
Yeah, for me. It's a good friend. He's been really supportive. He also makes comics, and has these LGBTQ comics, also these themes in Mexico, which is pretty hard. So he's a good friend that also makes this kind of topics of themes.
Oh, cool.
Is this stuff online, Benny? Is this stuff online? Sorry? Is it stuff online? His comics, you said?
Oh yeah, he uploaded in social media actually.
I'll look him up and we'll put some up on our Facebook. Oh. That's awesome.
Oh,
And then Delia, what about you?
My website is dcgable.com. And then I'm on Instagram, but you have to look me up by my actual name because I was having fun and made a very difficult to remember username. So, which I like.
I hate that.
But then I had to put my real name on there eventually. And then I'm on Facebook. I don't have a page. It's just my profile. I just never got around to making one. And now it's a little late to separate everything out. So I'm just like, yeah, okay, hey.
It's all me.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
I'm on Twitter, but not because I have to delete it because I haven't logged in forever because I never use it. So
I could not find the Mallory band. So you're going to have to help me find that on Facebook or.
Oh yeah. Look up Mallory Girls.
Mallory Girls. All right.
That's, there's like a folk band that is also Mallory. That
well, like, then there was like a weight loss thing called the Mallory Band. And I was like,
that's recent. That one is recent. And I saw that and I was like, oh, great.
Oh, SEO. Yeah.
Just look up Mallory Girls and we'll come up.
Excellent. Well, thank you all so much for being there. Dash is fantastic. I've been in love with it for years. And it's my privilege and pleasure to see it coming to fruition and to a head for at least the first chapter, we hope. Thank you guys all for so much for joining us. If you are excited about Flame On and you want to see more of this kind of content, flameonshow.com/flameonshow.com, Flame On Show on all the social media. And we have a Patreon that we are actually funding ourselves through these days somewhat. But obviously give all your money to great organizations like Black Lives Matter before you give us any of your money. And then come back and give it to us on Patreon.
And subscribe to Flame On because that's a great way to help promote them and get people to see them. And then like leave a little comment saying, I like this show. What we learned about Dash.
I love that. Yeah, like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Spending nothing.
But anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, guys. It's a pleasure.